Welcome to the Essence of Essence, Systematic Understanding of Everything's Kickstarter miniseries. This show is a collaborative effort between members of The Story Told, Bonus Experience, and Mage the Podcast. I'm Monica, third edition supplement developer and lead mechanical developer for Exalted Essence.
I'm Chaz, Exalted writer and fan. Once again, delighted to play some Exalted.
I'm Terry, producer for the show and noted Exalted expert, non-expert.
And welcome to our special Essence Kickstarter miniseries. Today we're going to talk through some of the basic systems in Essence, but specifically combat and charms.
The basic idea of combat in Essence is that players use withering attacks to build a resource called power, which represents the strategic upper hand that a character has. Power is then spent to make decisive attacks that cause injury. Essence has very strong teamwork rules that are quite pleasing to use, and even seemingly non-fighty characters have the new build power move, where a character does something else in the scene to aid other characters. For instance, a high performance and finesse character may harry an opponent with withering insults, like, haha, you don't meet your society's standard definition of beauty. That's a callback to build power, while for a character wielding a halberd or a high force and navigate character may generate power by steering the wagon train their circle mates are fighting atop to generate specific strategic advantage.
To make a decisive attack, a character must spend power equal to their target's hardness. They may choose to spend additional power to make the attack more devastating, but a character may not deliver a decisive attack again until their power exceeds their target's hardness once again, making the accrual and use of power a strategic consideration.
Hardness represents how easy a character is to overwhelm or wear down. A character's hardness is 2, plus their essence, plus any bonus from artifact armor. Sorcery is very similar, with characters building a stat called will instead of power. At the start of any fight, you do roll for initiative. Players and the storyteller roll join battle for each character using an appropriate attribute and ability combo. The join battle roll determines which side goes first, and all characters on that side get to go before the other side, with 2 exceptions. Players whose characters have a charm that lets them interrupt the order may use the charm to do so, and a significant storyteller characters may interrupt the turn order. Then the players go through in the order of their choosing and can propose the storyteller characters go, or the storyteller can interject and seize the initiative. Storyteller characters don't have attributes plus abilities, but have pools and may have 6 dice for, you know, rando soldier number 1, or 12 dice for kick-ass god of ass-kicking.
That too is a callback. One thing to note about the sorcery is interesting in that you can build will ahead of time, which I discovered all too late in a playtest where the wizard gets to be the person who does the first blowout move. And for that reason alone, you should back Essence. So
Harry is flapping his hands wildly.
Yes.
was the emphatic gestures of excitement there.
Yes.
Perhaps somatic components.
Yes.
Yeah. So that was one I didn't get until I read through it. Monica's like, you can build will ahead of time. And I'm like, oh, that changes everything. Once combat starts, the steps are roughly declare action, which is generally, I want to make a withering attack. I want to make a decisive attack. I want to build power. I want to accrue will. This is the step where you also declare the cool thing that you're doing, and the storyteller will assess any stunts. Then you declare your defense. How are you going to not get thwacked? You roll dice for an attack, which is going to be attribute plus a combat ability plus any bonuses or penalties that you have. The person being attacked gets to subtract successes equal to their parry or evasion, whichever is higher. Parry and evasion are static values. We went over how to calculate those in the previous episode. We'll talk about those in a little bit again. If the character is then doing a withering attack, you get 1 point of power if you met the target's defense. All extra successes beyond the character target's defense add to your power pool. You then get to skip forward to any counterattacks. If it was a decisive attack, any extra successes get rolled again, plus any additional power was spent, plus any modifiers. These are rolled for damage, and then the target gets to soak. Soak here is a static value and strictly deducts from the number of successes on the damage roll. Any leftover translate into damage and is marked off the target's health track.
Armor only comes into play during decisive attacks as it increases your hardness, which increases the amount of power required to make a decisive attack against you, as well as increasing your soak, which reduces the damage that the decisive attack deals. For defenses, parry equals chosen attribute plus close combat divided by 2, round up, of course. Or evasion equals an attribute plus athletics divided by 2, rounding up once again, using whichever is higher. Add in any charm effects, and then your soak is 1 plus 1 if your fortitude is higher than 3, and you add any soak from armor.
One of the things I was pleased in going through Essence, now that the full thing is out to backers, is the process of building an antagonist for Essence is no longer, oh, you want an exalt for your exalts to go up against? Guess you have to go through the entirety of character creation. In two ways. One, Essence provides a number of templates to work off of where it can just say, hey, maybe swap out this charm for this charm or what have you, or increase this dice pool up or down by one. Instead, the storyteller defines the type of antagonist, their role, what you want them to be good at, and what are known as qualities. What they are good at determines the size of the dice pool, which you can set at something like 10 for things a character is exceptional at, 7 for things they're good at, and maybe 4 for everything else. And qualities are interesting additional things that an antagonist may have. For instance, it may be massive and automatically reduces 2 dice from 2 points of power from all attempts to accrue power from a withering attack. If I can throw this back at Monica, were there any qualities you thought were particularly interesting?
There's one very obvious boss fight quality, which is, I believe it's called Furious Dragon's Ire, which allows that character to interrupt as many times as there are player characters.
Nice.
And take a whole nother action. Not just like, because usually you only get one action, but when they have this, it's for a solo boss fight, so like they get to go in between every time a player character takes an action, so you have this boss who's constantly hitting back instead of being just a meat sponge that has to wait its turn while everybody gets their chance to wail on it.
And qualities are not strictly a combat thing. There are other qualities such as a character's ability to interfere with your bureaucratic affairs, mess with your merits. One of them allows an antagonist to meddle maybe with a character's like resource or ally rating, or just kind of tie things up like that. And the quality system, I think, is something that even if you don't play Exalted, you should be stealing it to use in other games as a quick way of building antagonist characters without having to go through full-on character creation.
Without a whole lot of squinting, it is very similar to the antagonist system from the Story Path games,
yep.
Which I am delighted to see here because that is a very easy to use way to bring NPC characters to the table as a storyteller.
When Essence 2 comes out and it includes like the tension and momentum pool, we will understand Monica's grand quest to combine all the systems for which she is a mechanical designer into one system.
Weapons are defined by tags that allow you to give them a variety of custom options. You can have ranged weapons, defensive weapons. I would say that the tags in Essence have a more meaningful impact on combat than the ones in 3E for people who are familiar with the 3E system.
And it also allows you to collapse both weapons that your antagonist could wield as well as natural implements that a creature or something in creation could have. It makes sense that fiery could apply to both something that kind of looks like a dragon as well as a big-ass cannon that the characters are having to deal with. And that being under one unified framework without it having to be listed in every stat block is great. And I really hope there's a stretch goal, quick references for antagonist attributes. If not, I have work to do on the story. Retail Revolt.
I think you may have work to do.
I can hear that jade raining.
As you use your powers, you build up anima, which if you're already familiar with Exalted, that is your aura of power, builds up as you continue to do cool stuff. But how do you get your motes, which you spend to fuel your charms, back? A character gains back half their essence for any scene spent relaxing. A full night's rest recovers all of them. A character gets back one mote at the end of the round in combat. This is called the Breath of War.
It's such a badass name.
Elliot wrote that. It's fantastic. A character gains one anima for every mote used on an effect or charm, regardless of if it's committed or spent. However, motes spent to power anima effects do not build additional anima. No double dipping. Characters must use motes on effects for anima to increase, so you cannot simply burn motes out of your pool to increase your anima. Every 2 points of anima increases the level of display. At 1 to 2, the anima is dim, and the character's cast mark becomes visible. At 3 to 4, the anima is glowing, and the character is lit by a soft light. At 5 to 6, the anima is burning, the aura of the light of the anima can light up a room. At 7 to 9, the anima is at bonfire level and is visible from bow shots away. At 10, the anima is iconic, and it's visible on the horizon, displaying an image unique to the character and her personality. At the first 3 points, up to the end of glowing, the storyteller characters don't immediately notice unless they have a reason to. Once a character reaches 5 anima, they can no longer hide their divine nature. Anima levels, that is, the sets of 2, persist for a scene and then fade by 1 level, so from iconic to bonfire, from bonfire to glowing, by 1 level for each scene after. Some abilities allow a character to suppress their anima and therefore go incognito.
It really felt like it's one of those things where you want to keep your anima low until you don't.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Is there anything else you feel we should cover system-wise before we have some combat?
I really like the changes to anima display. In 3rd edition, with the Breath of War being introduced to recover motes during combat, it meant that player characters especially more rarely use up their personal motes and have to dip into their peripheral pool. So anima display isn't a common thing. And so having this in essence where your anima display builds up for any of the motes you use is a really cool way to bring it back in and make sure that it's there.
Another important thing to me about essence is that one of the concerns I had in building a scenario was, how do I bring in something from another 3E book? And Monica, what were your recommendations on that?
The biggest difference is that soak and weapon stats are going to be notably different, and that hardness applies differently. So like, you kind of want to set hardness is like a challenge rating, basically. So you can just ignore soak hardness and accuracy and stuff. You can use all the pools, like the dice pool sizes are fine. Just taking the dice pool sizes that antagonists have and the things that they are good at, you can just lift that directly from 3rd edition. Nothing needed to change there. Same with intimacies. You can even keep their defining intimacies and stuff. You're just going to have to make up some virtues for them. You just have to decide which ones are major and minor. But the thing of the weapon stats and stuff is that if they're listed as having a heavy weapon, you just go and take the heavy weapon from essence instead, and then you're good to go. Or if they have a certain type of armor, you can just switch it over with the armor type from essence, and you don't have to recalculate anything. You probably want to look at other stat blocks of existing antagonists of a similar threat level, and then just copy over their defense and hardness suggestions for that. And then you're maybe turn some of their merits, because I know I've written a bunch of antagonists for 3rd edition, so you maybe want to convert their merits into qualities or vice or whatever.
I guess let's jump into it then. So when last we saw our characters, they were dealing with the fact that some entity had caused shaking the loom of fate in the area of the Hundred Kingdoms, and some entity called the Uncrowned Prince was doing something through stealthy manipulation and some displays of force that made Monica's character a little hot and bothered. They were able to replace the goal of creating a unified empire with creating a Hanseatic League of Creation. You were at Spearfall and you were on the way to Mistridge or something like that?
Yes.
Okay.
Something like
that. So you have gotten out of Spearfall. You can see its rocky spire in the distance. And this being the breadbasket of the realm, you are taken in by the vast fields of, in some cases, yellow as rapeseed just kind of goes out into the distance, and the vast golden expanses of wheat. And the area is so verdant that vegetable farms are able to be maintained, and there is livestock. And looking over kind of just the sheer amount of food that is coming out of this region makes you appreciate kind of how important some stability to this area is. You are approaching a set of falls known as the Ferryman's Lament, and this has been a historic area whereby anyone who wished to exert control over this area of the Hundred Kingdoms would view this kind of as a pivotal point. This is one of those rivers that there is no natural crossing, maybe for hundreds of leagues or whatever unit is used in creation in either direction. So a kind of control of this slight narrow part where just ox-drawn barges can be used on winches to move goods back and forth could be vital to interrupting or allowing the flow of goods in the area. As you look around, what is the interesting building that you see there, and what do you think its state of repair is?
I think that there is a temple.
Okay.
That is overgrown. It's an old stone temple, but the building's been like eaten by vines. But I think that's almost by intent. If you look closer, the spray from the waterfall irrigates the vines so that they grow very lush and thick over the temple. It is perhaps a shrine to the god of the Green River.
Normally here, you would expect where these barges are for there to be two gatehouses where the amount that you had would be weighed and then it would be assessed and there'd be a shakedown. I mean, there you would be asked to pay a reasonable fee. Neither of those are abandoned. And the barges that are normally there are missing. The banks on either side, as Chaz mentioned, are overgrown. This overgrowth is reasonably large in the extent that even the trees that are normally lining the bank seem exceptionally overgrown. So these are just vine-covered trees that are kind of lining it on either side. Han, what do you think Han's detect ambush stunt would look like?
I am a chosen of journeys, and I have one of the, like, dramatic edit to be in the right place at the right time charms, which is not gonna help me here, but I'm going to play with a little improvisation and say that, like, all sidereals are to some degree attuned to the flow of fate and the way things are supposed to go. This is always in the flavor of their maiden. So Han gets a flash of divergent paths,
okay,
which maybe play out in his mind's eye with like an umber tone to them, so it's like a like black and white but yellow, that like show a bunch of possible outcomes, and then the maidens being what they are like, I don't know, you make sense of it.
As you kind of look around, you see at the crest, can you give me a detect ambush roll of some sort then, Monica, for Quicksilver Han? Your description of the divergent pass, that sounds like a stunt to me. Perfected template, what do you think your character looks like when they are scanning for something doesn't seem right?
I think perfected template, as someone who is traveling creation in kind of wonderment, mm-hmm, to see and understand, I think whenever I reach a new place, I'm just looking around to absorb all of the details. And so I'm probably particularly focused on the vine overgrowth, okay, because that's something I haven't seen before. In general, giving the world my attention.
The stunt for this, what is the overly specific way you note something at the top of the waterfall to Quicksilver Han to be like, is it common to get this kind of index of refraction off of sprayed light coming from this direction at this time of day at this angle of incidence or something like that? Which is your polite way of saying, like, there's something shiny up there.
Look how the water sparkles before it descends through the air. This is quite a sight. Would that I had the artistic talent to capture it. And I gesture towards the waterfall.
Normally, Monica, when you receive these visions, they are quite clear, but overlapping. And here, when you do it, normally whatever mental sound effect is associated with it is disrupted by what sounds like a horn blast. And you're like,
okay,
that's a new one.
I will also admire the suspicious beauty that Template has pointed out to me.
And Template, what did you get? Difficulty here is 3.
What attribute should I be using?
This actually sounds like a fortitude one to me, because it kind of represents your constant awareness, or at least that is my reading based on the scripter you gave me.
Okay.
And that also sounded like a stunt.
4.
Okay. So that is enough successes that you notice somebody on top of something at the top of the waterfall whose armor is peeking over the edge, maybe a little bit. You have detected your ambush. What would you like to do from here?
Are they clearly a threat to us?
You notice that there's at least one set of very shiny armor, and what appears to be the iridescence of it also appears to be coming from some sort of very large lizard. So you're not sure if it's a threat yet, but you know there's somebody wearing armor and somebody on a big lizard. And from the meta-narrative perspective, they are a threat to you, because if they weren't, we wouldn't be able to show combat. Quicksilver Han, as to not give away that you've spotted it, what is the subtle way in which you're like, there's a guy over there? that you use to indicate that ain't no one getting the drop on you.
So we have been traveling at least for a fair amount of time and probably have a system down for gestures or sign language or something that indicates that we have identified a threat, which seems like a sort of thing that, you know, just normal things that traveling companions do. So I certainly wait for a template to make eye contact, which lasts a heartbeat, perhaps longer than it should, before mm-hmm. I give them the, like, I just made a bunch of gestures for our audience who cannot see.
Yeah,
that I
for listeners at home, Monica is recommending that Chaz throw a fastball inside to the right, tighten to the right. So
I make a bunch of hand gestures, like, at chest level, so that if the person is looking down, they'll see my shoulders and back and not what I'm doing in front of me. So, like, hand gestures at chest level being like one guy on the ridge over there, kill him or whatever.
To the left, kind of in the area of spray of this waterfall that is going maybe 20 or 30 feet above you, certainly enough that it is not necessarily the height of it so much as the sheer volume of water that seems to be going over that the ferryman's lament has gotten its name. You have the temple to your left. You have a guardhouse slightly in from that is abandoned. The winches appear to be in place. Both of the barges are on the opposite side of this river that is maybe something in the neighborhood of 80 to 90 feet wide. So something no mere mortal could certainly cross, but maybe is within the exceptional abilities of those who have exalted. At the top of it, beyond where the road is, that's maybe 40 or 50 feet from the from this waterfall, you have a line of trees that is just completely overgrown, as well as there is on the other side. I am explaining this just because the combat system allows you to build power in a number of interesting ways that either of our characters may find of use. There doesn't appear to be much cover on the top, but the sun right now is such that it kind of gets in your eyes when you make your glance to the top of the waterfall. If you want, you could backtrack slightly and then try and go to the top of this waterfall. Or if you have an appropriate charm and wish to get the drop on someone, you can move decisively. Or you can try and get to the other side in some way. I imagine with a feat of strength, you would be able to operate the winch yourself to bring one of the barges over.
Are they far enough away that they are out of range of my ranged weapon at this point?
What's the range of ranged weapon?
Long range.
Short range, a character too far apart to swing a sword, but near enough to close the distance within a few fast steps. They are clearly above you. At long range, characters are so far apart that they can see each other. They cannot speak without a device or a signal. Yeah, so this would be at medium range. You could still shout at each other if you wanted to.
Okay. Since Han has given me the signal, I'm going to take that as an invitation to open hostilities.
I mean, you're not wrong.
Han is much more wise in the ways of the road than I, for he has traveled long and far across creation. I am going to hold up my arm, kind of my fingers outstretched.
Are you doing some Babe Ruth bullshit where you're like, called shot, fuckers? Sorry.
No. In fact, I am using arsenal summoning gesture with the alchemical mode of integrated armory systems, which lets me reflexively spend a mote of essence to summon my weapon from elsewhere. My artifact, the directional reality accelerator, which looks like a crystalline and orichalcum cannon, essentially, appears on my arm as I prepare to take a shot.
What is your weapon?
My weapon is an artifact essence cannon called the Directional Reality Accelerator. It has the tags ranged, artifact, one-handed, and powerful. The first three kind of do what they say on the tin, with the artifact letting you apply an additional bonus to one of the weapon's traits. And the powerful tag says it does extra damage at close range, which is pretty neat.
Are you targeting the lizard or the glinting armor that you see?
I think the glinting armor.
So, Chaz, you are going up against a goon. So we're going to use the one-roll resolution system, which sometimes an exalt encounters obstacles in the form of a trivial character, a nameless prison guard who blocks the way. Rather than pull out the full system, you roll close combat or embassy, and if you get three more successes, defeat the trivial target. This is not close combat or embassy, but we will slightly modify that to whatever your dice pool would be against difficulty three, and let's see if you mess up this guy.
So I'm going to use force plus ranged combat, which is 9 dice. Plus my stunt, and that gets me an extra die, right? 3.
Nice. What does the discharge of your weapon look like?
So, if you weren't looking closely, you almost wouldn't see it until it hits its target. because it is exactly what it says on the tin, a directional reality accelerator, in that it is accelerating time and space along a line towards the target. It just looks like a very narrow heat ripple in the air as the crystals of the artifact kind of pulse with power. Should I narrate it hitting the target as well?
Oh, yes.
The beam hits this trivial target. It looks like it folds in on itself, almost like he's imploding, as the essentially gravity time beam bends the space around him, decaying away his armor and crushing parts of him with the heightened gravity.
The target kind of folds in on themselves?
Yeah, imagine a beam of extreme gravity.
Okay, so in my head, this character once struck basically compresses in on themselves, like they were kind of thrown into a tiny black hole.
Yep.
At that, what noise does it make?
I don't think the weapon itself makes a noise.
Okay.
But I think there's a humming in the air mm-hmm. as the air is displaced
by the weapon beam.
And there is the kind of crunching, sucking sound of the target being hit.
At this, the giant lizard creature rears its head, and you kind of see how big it is. You're dealing with something that is, the maw of it is probably about 3 feet across. This thing looks like just a massive monitor lizard with slightly prismatic scales that kind of blends in to match the sky from this angle, as well as the spray of the water. With that, you kind of hear murmuring, the giant lizard is settled down. You have a moment to act if you would like, but otherwise you see a squat man with armor that almost looks like it is made out of pearl, holding what appears to be two flame pieces held together as if they were nunchucks, with broad flared ends to them, with this absolutely gaudy crown. You're just looking at it, you're like, that's a choice. If this Exalt were to post it on Exaltagram, the first comment would be brave. It is clearly made of magic materials to it, as well as what appears to be some sort of peacock feather and a number of things. And this nasal voice yells down and just kind of goes and just kind of yells at you. These lands are strange to me, but I am learning quickly. Leave now before you are the next conquest I add to my trophy case. And does what actually you have to admit does kind of look cool with the double flame pieces. Like normally if a teenager were to do that, they'd clearly hit themselves in the head or the junk. This guy is like, huh, someone's figured out that you're surprisingly good. Right. Yeah.
I mean, I am not much of a combatant because we did this on purpose. As I am tumbling away towards a safe location, I'm pulling some throwing knives out of my clothing and I'm like, get him, template, which is all I got.
When this person crests, that weird wanging headache from when you normally get your premonition is there again. You're like, this fucker is messing, is doing some loom of fate shit. That you do not like. To me, there are three antagonists. There are an Exalt, there is some sort of battle group, and then there is this giant-ass lizard. So I have their join battle pools, which are going to be 7, 5, and 4, and I will roll each of those individually. You get to roll join battle of whatever you think is appropriate.
Yeah, it's supposed to be one of your combat abilities. It's not so very like clear
my ranged combat.
Like ranged combat, which is also going to be mine, which I am not dreadfully good at. So I got 2 successes.
I got 5 successes.
So we have a tie. I got 5 successes for the lizard, 4 successes for the Exalt, and 0 successes for the battle group. I am going to say that since the lizard won and it has the high ground, it kind of gets to make the first move by just like leaping down upon you. And then to do that, the pool that the lizard gets to roll with is 8, which is its primary pool is eating exalts. I don't know how I came up with that term. And just like the characters, it will be attempting to build up power. In this case, it is leaping down in an attempt to pin Perfect. And one of the most disappointing things about Exalted is as a system, as the storyteller, I cannot generate stunts, which I think is the cruelest thing this game does.
Are welcome, just to clarify, you are welcome to describe your action in a cool way, and if you want the dice pool to be too higher, just set it too higher. That's how that works.
My thought is just since there is such an obvious vertical advantage that just temporarily gives it one die until it hits the ground. And this lunge of prismatic teeth is coming towards you, perfected. And as it does, you see the beauty of, you can kind of see as the colors of its scales are changing to match what would have been behind it as it descends on you, mouth open. That's a whopping two successes, and that's going up against your defense value, which I imagine your defense value is at least two.
it is three. Athletics of three, even if I pair that with finesse, that still gives me a three when I divide by two and round up.
What is the coolest thing you did to get away?
I think I watched it, I watched its lunge, and almost at the last minute, I just take a casual sidestep. Okay. So I am just out of the way because I saw how it was coming at me.
And as you see this, you see a large ox cart with what appears to be great wheels of cheese and some corn kind of going towards this ferry location. It looks like it's just kind of a family of some sort. Blizzard had a decisive advantage. Otherwise, next up, Chaz, would you like to move or would you rather Monica?
I'll let Han go first.
Okay. I have the charm Cat's Puff Tail, which I'm going to spend a mode on, which supplements a build power action. I'm a ranged combatant, technically, but I am not particularly good at it. So as this creature comes down and tries to chomp on Template, who successfully dodges out of the way, I'm still in that same general area for the moment. I know this is a beast that appears to be some sort of predatory creature, so I flick one of my throwing knives into the air so that it catches the sunlight and casts a bunch of angering and distracting light towards it. And while it does that, I whistle at it and make an offensive animal noise, and then catch it on the way back down to enrage it, because Cat's Puff Tail involves you having to intimidate or enrage the target. And that is, I'm going to build power with the inspire action for template using this charm.
So the charm goes with the build power action, right? Okay. It's not you do one then the other? Okay, cool.
No, I have to use it to modify a build power action.
Okay, so you've used that. You've used one mote, you say, so your anima goes up by one.
Does that count as a stunt?
I think it does.
5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. I'm going to roll 10 dice. Okay. 2 for my stunt, which I'm going to keep, not bank. And so the difficulty of this is 3. I have 3 on the dice, which is cool. So Chaz gets 1. And then 2 more, because Cat's Puff Tail gives me 2 automatic successes. So Chaz gets 3 power from me.
Ooh.
And then I'm going to reflexively haul ass a range band away.
Okay, got it. You kind of have 3 directions you can move. You can move back on the road. You can move down the tree line. Or you can, if you want to, attempt to go up towards the top of the waterfall. Do any of those appeal to you?
I'm going to go back towards the tree line. Once I get one more anima, I no longer have to worry about difficult terrain, and that's going to become important to us, I think.
So, Monica, who on your side gets to act next?
I mean, I think it's got to have to be template. I think it's just going to have to be you or me, right? So go.
What is this creature's defense, and what is its hardness?
Hardness to me seems like a 4, and I feel like the defense is going to be what's a good defense for just a defense 4, hardness 5, soak 4 on this? I assume a 30-foot monitor lizard counts as large in creation.
Yeah.
I am going to kind of take several steps back, just not withdrawing out of range, but just to kind of give myself some moving range. I'm going to raise the directional reality accelerator and fire a series of quick beams at this prismatic monitor.
Is that a flurry?
Kind of. I would like to use revolving bow discipline, which says that I spend one mote on step 1, and after resolving a ranged combat attack, I may make a second ranged combat attack against the same target or a different one, and that attack is treated like it was part of a flurry, but the initial attack does not suffer that penalty.
That didn't sound very stunty to me, so please proceed with whatever your pull is.
Okay, and I'm also going to spend for the ranged combat excellency.
Can he do that, Monica? Yes, because it's different steps?
You are activating multi-attacks on step one of this action. When you get to the second one, you'll have a new step one. That step one charm has to go to multi-attacks. But you can use any of your other step modifying effects through the rest of that attack. Just your step one is taken up by declaring the multiple attack action. Then when you get around to the second attack, that starts a whole new step one, and you can use the excellency there to clear your penalty.
So can I not? So I cannot use the excellency here?
On the first attack, but on the second.
Monica, that sounds like a step three thing. Are excellencies special?
Yes, they have a specific rule that says they must be used on step one in combat.
Okay.
I rolled five successes nonetheless, which sounds like a hit. This is a withering attack, so how does that resolve?
The withering attack resolves. You have met the defense of four, so you get one power. You had one success above that, which builds an additional one power. Chaz, your weapon has an overwhelming tag, I think, of three. Monica, what does overwhelming three do?
That is the minimum amount of power you can generate on an attack.
Okay, so Chaz had two normally, overwhelming three. Chaz gets automatically three power. Chaz's power, what's your power up to now, boss?
Six.
Okay.
Six, yeah.
There are no other steps to apply since this is a withering attack. So Chaz, you get to make your second attack now?
This one, I would like to spend for the excellency. What's the penalty on a flurry?
-3. It's the same as in third edition.
So that leaves me with 11 dice. And can I make this a decisive attack now?
If you want it to be, yeah.
I think I do.
The way a decisive attack works is, how much power did you spend?
Yeah, you have to wager how much power you want to spend on it right now.
I will spend 5
for this,
and then I roll 4 successes.
So you rolled 4 successes. The creature has a soak of 4.
My weapon damage at close range is +3 because of the powerful tag.
So it's your successes rolled plus your automatic successes from your weapon minus their soak.
So the successes rolled was 4 plus the weapon of 3. So that's 7.
Yep.
Okay.
And then soak of 4, you said?
Yep.
So 3 damage.
And with this, the creature wails. When you had delivered this blow, it kind of lost its entire tail, which just kind of dropped from its body and made the same wet thunk noise that the soldier did at that. And the creature changes color wildly, and it takes a moment to gather itself before making eye contact with you. It is close enough that the massive eyes set across its head look mildly cross-eyed as they bear down on you.
Awesome.
And with that, the strange crowned gentleman that was on top does something and is yelling about something about stolen destinies. And with that, you can see the family that was moving whatever it was has been replaced by a small ballista. The two children that were with it and the parents that were operating it now quickly settle about loading this ballista with one of its many giant bolts from across the river and places it on top. The soldiers come scrambling down the hill. They are not able to quite close the distance in time. Their garments are made out of a mixture of what appears to be leather and reed. This is somewhat hastily improvised armor. After seeing that second bolt being fired from your clearly devastating weapons, some of them have simply fled. This does not seem to be a particularly well-organized group. So we start back at the top. Chaz and Monica's team won initiative, so they get to act again before their opponents do. It was just the one-off for the fact that the lizard got to kind of come jumping down.
If you have a cool idea, go for it. Or if you would like me to build up some more power for you.
I would love some more power, but
I kind of built this character entirely around handing out power and defending itself with a couple weird, like, I'm also good at getting places.
I think one other thing worth noting is that we each regain a moat, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, get a moat back. We'll mark that off on this handy little essence wheel on this character sheet a fan made. I'm going to continue to rely on Cat's Puff Tail because it's very good for being the power battery. See, there's this ballista across the water from us. Okay, to be Cat's Puff Tail has to be intimidating. It's supposed to be like you're puffing yourself up to scare people.
Uh-huh. It doesn't need to be effective. That's just what it needs to look like, right?
Right? Yeah, yeah. It needs to look like. That's the constraint of using this charm. And to get the bonus, it has to be that sort of thing. But it specifically modifies an inspire build power roll, which is the mm-hmm. one using presence or performance. So I'm going to continue to do that. So I see this ballista setting up on the other side, and they're pulling the thing back.
Mm-hmm.
I bark, hey, more like, over here, so that they see suddenly there's this guy who was hiding previously. And with a, like, swift flick of my wrist, I bury one of my throwing knives, like, into the body of the ballista.
Mm-hmm.
Very much in a, like, I could have hit you with that sort of way. No, I couldn't. My range combat's only two. Think twice before firing that as my threat, and I'm going to build power again.
While you're rolling, what is the thing about the dagger or whatever you threw that clearly indicates it is not something that a mortal made?
I love the idea that all exalts carry weird equipment, period. So they are a brace of ordinary knives. They're not enchanted. They're not magical.
Mm-hmm.
But I did buy them in Yushan. The steel is of obvious unearthly quality because it was smelted and made from ore found in heaven. The handles are clearly wrapped with stuff you just literally cannot find in creation.
I also like the idea that when the blade hits, instead of making a twang noise, it very clearly sounds like somebody is singing.
Love it.
I storytell mostly to force players to describe interesting things to me, and now you've discovered my goal in the world.
Yes, and I think I get stunt dice for that.
Yes.
If you want to, like, it's sort of a cool thing. I do like that. If you want to, like, make someone do a Q&A for stunt dice, because in essence, stunt dice are just, I described it in a cool way. So if your criteria for stunts is answer my question, that's pretty awesome, actually. All right, so that's four successes. So I got one for meeting the difficulty, plus one extra, plus two more from Cast Puff Tail. So that's four power to Chaz.
Okay.
Ooh.
And the power is arbitrary. Right. Even though you wanged the ballista, Chaz can now spend that perfected template, can now point that power anywhere.
Right. The constraints of the charm are that I simply have to intimidate, coerce, scare someone. And as long as I am playing within the theme of the way the charm works, that's legal. What Chaz chooses to do with the power is up to him.
I guess next question. I did three injuries to this monitor.
Okay.
How badly injured does it look at this point?
It is limping, but pissed. And if it got away, it would lick its wounds and come mess you up in about 30 minutes.
Okay, yeah, I'm going to go for broke here. As it is looming over me, we kind of see the camera zoom around from the slightly cross-eyed look to over the lizard's shoulder, looking at Perfected Template, who has an impassive expression on their face, because this is in part what the Exalted are made for. And so I am in my heroic moment here. So the monitor's fangs are kind of dripping with lizard goop, almost like a Komodo dragon, how they have that very venomous saliva. Perfected Template doesn't flinch, doesn't take a step back, doesn't react to the stench of its breath, but holds up the directional reality accelerator and fires directly into the beast's maw.
That sounds
all worth a stunt.
That sounds all stunty like.
Okay, cool. I am once again. I'm just going to spend for the ranged excellency. So that should be a total of 16 dice, and I would like this to be a decisive attack, spending all five power.
Okay.
Do I roll a hit and then damage, or just one roll?
You rolled a hit normally, like you normally would. So your excellency plus your ability plus plus your attribute, and then your weapon accuracy adds successes to that roll. And then when you hit, your damage pool is your extra successes plus your power spent plus your weapon's damage.
It's a lot of terms that once you know what they all mean, they all make obvious sense and flow together nicely.
it's just the part where you have to figure out what everything means.
So to hit, I rolled six successes. I then add my accuracy to that, right?
Add your accuracy, yeah.
So that's nine successes.
Okay, we take away the four defense from the lizard from that, right?
Yep.
So that's five. That gives you the five dice that flow into now your damage roll.
Yep. So you've got five dice from hitting, five dice from power, so you have 10 damage dice.
So that is eight damage.
Ooh. And with that, to say that the creature is dead would be a bit of an understatement. At this very close range, what do you think that kind of blast looks like?
So it is a very narrow beam, and this is a very large beast.
Okay.
But I think what we see is the angle is very low behind Perfected Template as they fire the beam up through the rearing mouth of the monitor lizard as it's about to like plunge down on them to deliver a devastating bite. And we see the glow and pulse of the crystals as the beam fires and the ripple of like the heat ripple in the space of distorted reality. And then like we see the sky through the back of the monitor's head. So there's just a big old hole and like the teeth are gone and like there's just a giant hole through the lizard beast's head and it like collapses in a heap.
Okay. And with that, as it dies, it takes on the appearance of the last thing it was kind of on top of. So actually you have this dead creature that is on the ground that largely looks like the ground, except for the portion that it was immediately above you, which looks like you. So there's now this dead creature on the ground that is mostly dead creature looking like ground, and a small part of it that was the portion of Perfected Template that was immediately above Perfected Template before Perfected Template performed an emergency lobotomy on the creature. at this point, the battle group has caught up to you. And despite the fact that they are seemingly so ragtag, there is quite a bit of them. So the description for this is they have 8 levels of health to represent that there is a few, the battle group rules are listed. This is a few dozen reasonably trained soldiers, and they have 8 points of health, but an overwhelming of 3. So they do kind of make up for that. Perfected is the first person there, so is what they are going up against, again, with this weird collection of strange pole arms and exotic swords and other weapons that you don't think you've seen before. They get 8 dice.
And this is a withering attack, right?
Yes. They get a mere 2 successes. What is the reason their attack is so ineffective against you?
I think the moment that I fire the directional reality accelerator, mm-hmm. the sun is lined up behind that space. So it just reflects off of me. And so that gives me the extra moment I need to sidestep out of the way of their weapons. That just that glint of sunlight off of my crystalline form.
They have been utterly ineffectual, but they do have overwhelming 3. So they are... The strangely crowned character is absolutely infuriated by this and begins barking orders at the ballista group and is clearly pointing at, like, point at the weird one! And they're like, which one's the weird? And issues kind of a clarifying bark of order, like, point at the one that looks like a meat sack! And with that, there's this Oedip moment as Quicksilver has a bolt leveled against him.
I specifically told you not to.
You had one job!
I'm going to activate Read in the Wind.
Okay, what does that do?
It increases my defense.
Okay.
I won.
Okay, and they got 4 successes on that launch.
Okay, which puts me at defense 5, so...
Okay. What is the cool-ass thing you did to avoid this bolt coming towards you?
Sure, I'm still kind of in the trees. Han has that moment, that like prescient sepia tone flash of, if you stay put, you're gonna get a ballista to the chest. So he tumbles just out of the trajectory, because it was a near miss, so just out of the trajectory of this ballista bolt, which shoots past where he was a heartbeat ago and slams into the trunk of the tree, cracking it. Like straight up and down.
Okay.
And he does yell, I specifically told you not to, as as he's tumbling away.
I like the light Foley work we got there. This is a ballista bolt, so that feels like at least an overwhelming 2 because it did shatter the tree beneath you.
Sure.
Okay. Can enemies use build power?
No. Enemies have access to all the core basic rules that don't specifically say this is for PCs only.
Okay. So with that, at the top of the next round, the strange short man with odd armor and an odd crown is again barking orders and is just kind of yelling on how to coordinate. If I really wanted to, I would make some sort of inspire roll or something like that. But who cares? We're at the top of the round again. Who would like to act?
Do you want me to keep going first to top you off?
Yeah, I like the way that's working out. Actually, yeah. I have a thing that I'd like to do that I think will be kind of cool here. So I see that the bolt just go flying at Han, and there's a flutter of like concern because I'm worried about Han, and it's kind of an unexpected flutter of concern. In response to this, I basically ignoring the group that is storming around me, just striding through the crowd, I'm going to take aim and fire at the ballista crew on the other side. I am going to start by using revolving bow discipline.
Okay.
So that I get my extra attack here.
At this point, you've spent a bunch. Does your anima do anything cool at this point?
You should easily be an active anima at this point, because I am.
Yes, I am an active anima. My active anima effect is be more precise, that when an attack targeting me misses, I can spend anima at step 4 to inflict a success penalty on the attacker's next attack. Was that stunt worthy?
Yes.
Okay. So that's 11 dice as I blast away with a withering attack at the ballista crew.
Yeah. I got no successes.
Okay. You are surprised with the alacrity with which this family of farmers soon turned into a moderately competent ballista crew, followed by somebody who has just been shouted out by this strange entity on the top of the hill. You swear the shot was dead on, and it was, and you are confused by the way in which the shot, which normally travels straighter than a lawgiver's arrow, does this S-curve around the ballista and lands behind it and creates this massive crunch, this pothole in the road behind. Something has twanged the strings of fate tied to this blast that you have done. Do you think your character has seen anything like this before?
I don't think so.
The shot has missed. And with this, it seems like it would make sense for me for the ballista to be able to seize this moment to fire back. And they would like to make a withering attack again against Quicksilver Han.
A question. I still gain my 3 power, right? Okay. And then do I get to finish my action before they go?
Yeah, I guess this doesn't count as a counterattack. So yeah.
Okay. Well then, as I see that the beam curve around, and so what is their hardness?
3.
3. Okay. So I have just the bare minimum there if I were to do that, which I think I won't. So I see the beam curve around, and so I'm going to assess the angle of the curve and try to move the weapon in a way so that the beam spiraling out of it counters the effect of the curve.
So your character yells compensating?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And I will spend another moat, use my excellency.
Okay. That sounds stunty to me. I would have also accepted it being a stunt if Monica had yelled stay on target.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 9 successes. Does that mean I gain 9 power?
Their defense and hardness is both 3, so that removes that. You've met the defense, you automatically gain 1, and that, sorry, 7. 7 power from that. So you are swole with power. And power doesn't go above 10. That's part of the goal. You get, yeah.
If you have power spillover, you can either hand it off to other player characters, or you can convert it into anima. Every 2 points of power becomes 1 point of anima.
Ooh.
Well, I'm at exactly 10.
Okay. The Ballista Notes group sees that their previous attack on Quicksilver was ineffective, and this character is obviously much more lithe than at first they thought. And they recenter, firing back the way your bolt came. And they get a whopping 1 success. And you almost... you almost laugh at it, but in that moment of distraction, the other forces descend upon you. They are going to attempt to make a decisive attack against you, against Perfected. So they have 5 power accumulated, of which they need to spend 4 to make the attack. They are going to have a total then dice pool of, they have a base dice pool of 7. They get the additional 5, you say, from the power?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
But this is going to get withered down pretty heavily. They got 10 successes.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Chaz gets to deduct Chaz's defense, right, of 4. So that knocks it down. That knocks it down to 6.
Yep.
So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
I'll activate Iron Kettle Body for 1 moat, which increases my soak by 3 against a single attack.
Plus the 5 power, so they're going to roll a total of 11.
Yep, and then what's their damage rating?
Plus 1. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So they get a total of 6. What was your soak?
My soak was 4 plus 3 for the charm, so 7.
They bear down on you with an impressive array of force and weapons, and under any other circumstances, you'd be feeling what is technically known as some hurt right now. But instead, you just feel a press of ineffective weapons clang off your adamant body. At this, the person who was on the field yells some sort of train of curses.
I see that these mortals are ineffective against me, and feel that they're only directed against me because of the crowned lunatic up here who is making a big stink. How far away is he currently? Is he a medium, or is he...
He is at medium.
Short? He's at medium. Okay, so I don't think I can get to close range, so I won't be able to apply that. However, again, ignoring the attacks around me, I take several decisive steps towards this crowned hooligan. I raise the directional reality accelerator, and I say, "This is your last chance to surrender." Before, assuming he does he have any witty banter to reply to that?
I think the response you get is phrases. So in my head, your character is just walking up that shattered temple.
Yeah.
In an attempt to get closer. And even though there is still like 20 feet between you and he still takes a step back out of sheer intimidation. I like the idea that because of like perspective, he's not sure actually how tall you are. Like it is, like he doesn't know how big your weapon is. He doesn't know how tall Quicksilver is. So like, there's nothing there for comparison. Like that time I was in Texas and I came upon a pygmy goat farm that also had a very short row of trees out front. So I thought they were like 30 feet away, but it was like 3 feet and one just came and bat at me. It was real, real, real confusing. And he just yells, "You're facing a king that was never to be born, who yet still builds a kingdom. It is you who should be backing down."
And I'll fire.
Okay.
Is that stunt worthy?
I think so.
Excellent. So that brings me up to 11.
Okay.
Since I recovered a moat at the end of last round, I do have another moat to spend, and I'll spend that on ranged attack excellency, bringing me up to 16 dice.
Okay.
6 successes on the attack roll. A decisive attack roll, obviously.
Yes. 6 attack against this character's defense of 5.
I was wagering all of my power. I see no reason to hold back in this instance.
Yeah. Against this character's defense in this case of 5. So you have 1. So now you get to roll that plus your weapon plus the power you blew.
So that'll be 12.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
That is 7 against their soak of 2. So they're what is technically known as fucked up. You have blown off the crown, most of a shoulder, and you take particular joy in hearing the crown make that crunchy gravity noise as it caves in upon itself. The monarch attempts to grab at it, only to have their arm mangled within this kind of gravitational field. And with that, he mutters something. And previously, where the ballista was on the ground opposite to you, has now switched places, and the family has returned to its position of being a family carrying moving cheese and corn across. So he previously was on the top of this waterfall. The ballista was down on the road opposite to you. The two have switched, and the family has seemingly untransformed, no longer part of his temporary loom. And he kind of seemingly slips between two trees, and you lose track of him. And now there is this family kind of precariously on top of the rocks of the waterfall. And with this, the soldiers kind of scurry away, abandoned with this, and seeing the futility of it, they are going to make a route check, in this case, against difficulty 3. They get but 2 successes, and they just begin wildly fleeing from you, dropping their weapons. The family is precariously atop. Do you wish to try and pursue the strange fellow who accosted you, or do you wish to be heroes and save the family? Do you save the kitty or go after the bad guy?
I'll save the kitty.
There's 2 of us. Yeah, I'm just like, there's 2 of us. I'll go save the family. You go kill the bad guy. I'm immune to difficult terrain right now, so.
What is the cool thing your character does to cross the river to find that their opponent has seemingly fleed using means beyond simple running?
So you mentioned earlier that there was the crank for a team of oxen to pull across uh-huh. the river. I am going to use the aptly named charm 10 Ox Meditation.
Okay.
to crank this barge back to this side, perhaps faster than it was designed for. It reduces the difficulty of a feat of strength that I perform. But since we're in narrative mode here, I assume that I can just do that and pull the barge across the river before using it to cross to the other side.
Nice. And what does it look like as Quicksilver ascends this waterfall as if it were nothing?
He still has to climb it. It just the difficult part, just the part where like the water rushing down would make that hard, doesn't apply. it's not like Biter Foot style where he could just walk up the waterfall like on it without a problem.
Is your character like muttering or maybe singing, or like what is the NBD sign of your character doing this?
One does not normally hand over hand like rock wall climb a waterfall. That's like kind of impossible. Mm-hmm. It's not extremely difficult. So first off, the fact that he is just climbing the waterfall like particular bougie jock climbs a climbing wall at a certain center they paid a lot of money to be a member at, with the practice of a person who has climbed many things before, except it is up a body of water that is moving quite fast. And he doesn't particularly seem to be at all bothered by the fact that, like, it's splashing over his head and shoulders and in his face, and, like, that the handholds are wet or any of that. Like, that part doesn't seem to bother him.
Okay. You ascend it. You are able to level the ox cart that seemingly was going to perilously tip over. Mm-hmm. You're able to rearrange enough stones to kind of help everyone get off. By the time you're able to get to the other side, perfected, there is a fair amount of distance between you and this character that does not seem to be limping as much as the fact that they have a mangled arm seems to suggest. Is there anything you wish to shout as the enemy gets away?
You'll build no kingdom here, as he disappears into the distance, and I go back to make sure that Quicksilver Han is okay.
And with that, the second half of our little rules demo is done. Monica, hopefully I didn't bed touch your rules.
Not at all.
We have done an essence. Anyone have any thoughts before we finish our essence miniseries?
You know, I could talk forever about this, but I do want to know how you enjoyed the demo.
This system is sufficiently streamlined that if I were an ST sitting down with a few play aids and maybe something like a score generator, I feel like I could do a no prep exalted essence. And the phrase no prep exalted is not a phrase I thought one could utter unironically.
That's fair.
Yeah. I guess my key takeaway, and I don't know if I've actually said this on air, this game, I did not understand it at first. It feels like it is trying to have you play more exalted, not just in the fact that it goes through the rules faster, but it goes through more scenes faster. It lets you do more of an arc faster. It lets you progress faster. At the end of all of our episodes, we talk about, hey, what's a story you would want to do in this region? And every time we mention one, that represents 6 months of role-playing, seemingly. If you were to do any one of those in essence, that could be a month of Fridays. It just lets you see more creation and without really skimping on the experience. And if you're like me and you want to do a bunch of games where you bop around and explore different aspects and get to develop different characters in different places, I think Essence does a superlative job of doing that. And I did not understand it when first I learned about Essence and started reading through it. Chaz knows I hate role-playing and don't like reading.
I had a great time being a combat badass. I like playing highly competent characters who are really good in one area and less effective in another. So Perfected Template is like on brand for the kind of characters that I like. It felt Exalted-y to me when we got into combat, especially because while the charms are less granular, you're still figuring out which charms to use, how to balance your spend versus the moat recovery. And like, I burned out my whole moat pool. I ended with none of my emotes remaining, which, like, to me, it means that I was using the maximum that I could use out of the all the character abilities, but also had to really consider which ones am I going to use each round, but didn't have to do any fiddly math to do it because it's just one emote at a time. All of that was a lot of fun. Getting up to 10 power was great. Blocking the attack outright with Iron Kettle Body was great. Like, it generated a lot of cool and fun moments for me in character. And like I've said, I don't get to play much Exalted. I'm usually on the storyteller side. So this gave me some of the Exalted experience that I am looking for.
Awesome.
And those are our thoughts on Exalted Essence. We have two Essence episodes remaining, one on general systems and then one on combat and charms. And then we will resume our regular tour of creation. We plan on covering the West, the Wild and the Fair Folk, Malphius and Demons, Underworld and Ghosts, Autochthonia, Gods, Elementals, and Yu-Shan, and then a tear-filled goodbye episode, unless we come up with something else that we decide that we want to cover as part of what we consider to be the essential elements of Exalted. And with that, exalt strong. Under other circumstances, obviously, I would let you track them down and beat the piss out of them, but it's 650. Maybe I didn't plan for that, okay? Chaz, say that again and say 8 instead. I also realize, as post facto, I have fulfilled my what Chaz has observed to me in that all games I run are seemingly simple thing getting continually slightly complicated. Are we going straight into fuck up a guy territory?
I think so.
Crunching, sucking noise. That is what I always want associated with a weapon.
I was speaking continuously through there. You can assume that I described an awesome stunt.
If you want to include something mildly homoerotic that your character would do here, that is also entirely acceptable. The Flavors of the Maiden sounds like an amazing energy drink series that...
Sold in vending machines in Yu-Shan only.
Yes.
This sounds like a Chaz question.
Well, since everybody's frozen, I'm just going to talk here.
If I mess it up with Monica, I can probably make up for it with a pie, but with Dixie, I don't know.
I was frozen, so I just started talking about a thing I wanted to talk about. So